Stay connected to the Christian Whistleblower at www.christianwhistleblower.com. Follow Jeffrey Daugherty on Twitter. Stand by for unindoctrination. The Christian Whistleblower.
Connected.
The Christian Whistleblower.
You are now connected.
And now, taking on over 2,000 years of doctrination head-on, stand by for deep-end information. Asking questions you're already afraid to ask. Stand by for parabiblical research, spiritual technology. Get ready to be your own guru. Master your own ascension. Guide your own spirit. And now, showing you how, here's the Christian Whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Jeffrey Daugherty, your Christian Whistleblower. We're running on backup systems. We had something bad happen right as we were going to air. So we're on backup systems. The sound quality, probably not quite what it normally is. I do apologize for that. But we are doing all that we can to do all that we can. Welcome to you. It's the 19th of May. It's Thursday night. It's 8 o'clock in the East Coast. And, of course, that's 5 o'clock out West. And I want to welcome you cordially to the new Create Yourself program with NCK and Friends. Of course, I'm your Christian Whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty. And the Create Yourself program is here to interview people that are on the cutting edge of spiritual evolution, people that are on the cutting edge of spiritual ascension, people that are doing things that can help you do your thing. They can help me do my thing. And we all need a little help doing our thing every now and then, don't we? And that's what this is all about. Create yourself and live the life you'll love with NCK and Friends. Of course, NCK is New Cosmic Knowledge. That is the suite of spiritual technologies that we roll out to you to help you do what you need to do. And, of course, the friends are the folks like Martha Hazard Decker, who we have with us tonight, to talk about all of the different ideas, the different philosophies, the different techniques, and the different perspectives on this spiritual life that we're all seeking to live. I was on Darkness Radio last night for 2 hours. If you would like to go to the Darkness Radio website, darknessradio.com, I think you'll appreciate the show that was on last night. Very good show, a very interesting show, and I think that, pardon me, you want to go ahead and check it out. And moving forward, we're going to have Wednesday night Christian Whistleblower show, Thursday night Create Yourself, and I'm toying with an idea for a third show on Thursday night. So Wednesday night Christian Whistleblower, Thursday night Create Yourself. I'll probably expand each of those programs to 90 minutes, but as of now, they are 1 hour at this time, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock in the West. And we do have some information that I want to share with you tonight and some stuff from Pope Francis.
Sedet vos, venerables frates, ante quam hoc consistorium celebraretur, iam per literas mentem vestram
singulia. Now, I'm not going to ask you to translate that. I'll tell you what he's saying. And Pope Francis, it was actually yesterday that Pope Francis likened Jesus to ISIS and said that Muslims must breed with Europeans. Now, yesterday I talked about the fact that Pope Francis was comparing the militant nature of ISIS to the call of Jesus for his disciples to go into all nations and make disciples of all people. And I've been telling you for years that Islam, Christianity, Judaism, it's all the same religion. It's all with actually different religions, but it's all following the same God. And you don't want to believe me, but I'm telling you, when the Roman Church went forward in the guise of the Roman army, they were killing fools. It was repent or die. Just like ISIS is doing, just like the Israelites did, so did the early Christians. It's the same thing. It's a religion of bloodshed. It's a religion of conquer. It is a militant religion. And folks, it's not just Jeffrey Dardy saying it. Pope Francis himself said it. Let me remind you what he said. It is true, and this is a direct quote, that the idea of conquest is inherent in the soul of Islam. However, it is possible to interpret the objective in Matthew's gospel, where Jesus sends his disciples to all nations in terms of the same idea of conquest. It's especially easy for you to interpret the objective, that statement of Jesus when you have your roots from a pagan culture, such as I do, in the Irish Isle, the Emerald Isle, where the Romans just marched in and said, convert or die. And I talked about that last night, so you can go look at the archive if you want to go ahead and take a look at that. But what I want to talk about tonight is the fact that the Pope is advocating that people marry and interbreed with the Muslim migrants. Now, this is nothing less than groundbreaking. You know, when you are a Catholic and you go to get married, you have to sign a paper that says, I'm only going to raise my kids Catholic. And yet, here is the Roman Catholic pontiff saying the, quote, integration is all the more necessary today since a result of selfish search for well-being, Europe is experiencing the grave problem of a declining birth rate. He stated, a demographic emptiness is developing, and his opinions are stunningly similar to those of top imam Sheikh Mohammed Ayed, who said Muslims should exploit the migrant crisis to breed with Europeans and conquer their countries. Folks, I'm not sure what you're seeing. You may be seeing a failing Roman Catholic Church saying, hey, if our brand of Abrahamic religion is not going to make it, maybe Islam is the brand of Abrahamic religion that's going to make it. You know, the Pope, the imams, the rabbis, if you're the Lord, you're like the CEO of GM. You don't care if it's Chevy or what's another GM product. You don't care if it's Chevy or, I can't believe it, Buick that makes it. You just want one of them to make it. If you're Ford, you don't care if it's Lincoln that makes it or Mercury that makes it. You just want one of them to make it. So the Lord's sitting here. Maybe he said Catholicism is not the one that's going to make it. And maybe all the players are falling in line with Muslims, with Islam, because maybe that's the horse that they're betting on. At any rate, it's very, very interesting what we're seeing. Very, very interesting what we're seeing. And there's another piece of news coming out of the Vatican, and it has to do with exorcism.
It's the power of Christ that compels you. The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you.
And what we have seen is that the exorcist filmmaker says that the Vatican allowed him to film a real exorcism last month. That's right. William Friedkin, the director of the horror classic The Exorcist, has revealed that he was allowed to film a real exorcism at the Vatican earlier this month, which is interesting because Friedkin's 80 years old, and his movie The Exorcist came out in 1973. And he told filmmakers at a masterclass at the Cannes Film Festival late today that he was invited by the chief exorcist in Rome to record an exorcism. I was invited by the exorcist, the chief Vatican exorcist, says Friedkin, to shoot and video an actual exorcism, which few people have ever seen and which nobody has ever photographed, he said. And Friedkin said that he was taken aback at how close the ceremony was to the exorcism depicted in his 1973 film. I was on Darkness Radio last night. We talked exclusively about exorcism, and Dave Schrader asked me why all the exorcism stuff, which is what George Nori always asks me when I'm on coast as well. And the more I hear stories like this and the more I see the way things are going on, it is a Roman Catholic Church that is afraid of losing its power and its influence, doing everything it can to create fear, dread, and what better way to get people to believe that there's a horde of demons out there and only the church that can, it's only the church that can protect them, to bring them back to the church. So, interesting things to ponder, interesting points to think about, but we're not here to talk tonight about that. We're here to talk tonight on Create Yourself with NCK and Friends, and we're here to talk tonight about the paranormal and about applying law enforcement techniques to the paranormal and some other things as well. I met Martha Hazard Decker at a paranormal conference. We became friends right away, had a lot of great conversation, and I appreciated the way Martha looked at the paranormal. And along with another man, Greg Lawson, which we're going to talk to, they have a very unique and disciplined view of how to do investigations. And I wanted to have Martha on to talk about this. And without any further ado, let me go ahead and say hello to Martha Hazard Decker. How are you, Martha?
Hi, I'm doing great.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad you could join us tonight. Let me throw you a curveball real quick. Let me play something for you that I said last night on our Create Yourself program. And given where we met, I want you to give me your opinion on this. It's just about a 57-second clip, and I said this last night on our show. Let's have a listen, and after this, just give me your feedback, your opinion, and no holds barred, okay?
Okay.
Okay, have a listen to this.
And when you are a speaker and you don't show up at all of the sessions and you don't show up for all of the panels and you complain about it, then you are nothing but a paranormal Pharisee. And let me tell you something, brother. Let me tell you something, sister. You are not nearly as famous as you think you are. And I wish that some of these organizers would call you out. You lousy paranormal Pharisees. Shame on you. Shame on you. And I don't know, if I go to another one and I see the same thing happening, I might just start naming names. So you better check the next conference you're going to. And if you see my name on the speaker list, you better show up, because if you don't, I'm going to mention you by name as a paranormal Pharisee. You're not as famous as you think you are. Shame on you.
So, Martha, how does that strike you?
Well, first I have to stop laughing. Because it's not offensive. You know, and it's not just paranormal. I don't care what conference you're at or for what. Or what band's playing. If you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you commit to going somewhere, barring a family emergency or illness, you should be there.
Absolutely.
You know,
I agree 100%.
And I
saw it in the church. I've seen it in politics, but I expected better within the paranormal genre. And I know it sounded angry, but I was more disappointed and hurt because, you know, the conference I was just at, where Rita Louise was, our friend,
yeah.
Scotty and Rainey Roberts, you know, Rocky and John, the guys putting it on, working to death. And then these speakers that they fly them there, they put them up in a nice hotel, they pay them money to speak, and they can't show up other than it's when it's time for them to speak. And it just bothered me. And I just wanted to see if I was the only one that noticed that and wanted to get your feedback on it.
It does, and I've been to conferences the same way. They only show up for the speaking, and that's it. And, you know, people who attend conferences, attend events, they want to be able to, you know, walk by your table, or if you don't have a table, you're out, you know, walking the crowd or something. I've always done that. And, you know, there's people who, yeah, I won't name necessarily right now, but
no, there's no reason
who are not
to
like that. Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, aren't like that. And I don't think that the event planner is getting, you know, what they need for, you know, for their money. Bring somebody
Absolutely.
Up. Like, hey, you know, Scotty, tell him to send me in next year.
I will.
I'd love to go to that.
Rita and I both mentioned your name to Scotty. And, you know, I do have respect for people like Travis Walton, people like Lon Milo Duquette. I mean, you know, arguably two of the more well-known fellows there, and they were there a lot. It's, you know, just some other people. And, again, we're not going to go into name names. But it just frustrated
right.
me. And, really, I'm frustrated, Martha, by a lack of integrity and a lack of integrity is the only thing I can think of. It's so slipshod and it's so sloppy and it's so shoddy. That's why I appreciate people like you and Greg with law enforcement backgrounds that actually are trying to bring some discipline, trying to bring some scholastic mindset, and trying to bring some actual real investigative techniques to what is increasingly becoming a fly-by-night genre.
Yeah. It is, of course, you know, the paranormal field has been around for, you know, for a very long time in all different forms, whether it's books or movies or whatever. You know, we know that. But I think today, because today is such a quick, for the people that are, say, in their 30s and younger.
Right.
Everything is so quick. And a lot of them don't read, like, you know, I'd read 5 or 6 books a week. But I think I remember by the time when I was 10, 11, I was into science fiction. And I was in Memphis, Tennessee, literally read every single science fiction book in the library in the adult section. I just skipped straight to the adult section. And, you know, grew up on, you know, what reading, you know, Isaac Asimov, things like that. And, you know, there's a lot of them, they don't. They want it quick. So, you know, going to a conference, spending money on a conference, and that's one of the things I tell people to do when they're new into this. You don't learn watching TV because that's entertainment. And, you know, you need to go do these things, and you need to learn. Talk, pick the brains of the older people like us.
Absolutely. Martha, did
yeah.
you ever read any kind of a random question? You talked about reading science fiction. Did you ever read any L. Ron Hubbard science fiction?
Yes, I did.
How is it?
Gosh, it's been so long that I don't even remember what I thought back then. A few years ago, I think I tried to pull one up in one of the old books and read it, and I don't think I got through it. But But I did. Oh yeah, I read all of that. You know. And,
very interesting stuff. Martha, tell us a little bit about your law enforcement background, if you will.
Okay, well, I started in it back in the mid-80s and as a reserve. And in Texas, reserve is the exact same as a paid officer. It's just you volunteer your time, and that's kind of what I did. You know, I didn't join the service, so giving back to my community, I did it in the form of law enforcement and as a firefighter, too. And but when I started in the mid-80s, I was the only female in Henderson County in East Texas, which was kind of a trip. And then I went into it was a real trip. And then I ended up going full-time into it in the early 90s. And I started out as a reserve initially at that one, the department I finally retired from, but I went from that to sergeant to, you know, the lead detective and the assistant chief when I actually retired.
Absolutely.
I did so much stuff. I did undercover work with the, specialized in like the militia, the extremist, sovereign citizen type person. I was a negotiator. I still keep my training, my continuing ed up. I was an instructor. I was public information officer for the department and the city because of my journalistic background. I did crimes against children there. That was one of my specialties as well. When I retired from there, I went to work for the special investigator or death investigator, child death investigator. And, so I have over 20 some odd years of, you know, doing investigative stuff with with children. I did, you know, when I was a detective over there, the felony stuff, I did that. The undercover work with the militia type stuff was absolutely fascinating. I worked with so many different agencies just through the years with that, you know, everything from special crimes with our DPS to Homeland, FBI, you name it. I got to work with them, and I had a blast doing that.
Martha, what was it like early on being the only lady?
Well, I got along great with all the officers out here, the ones that I, you know, would run into, and there's several cities around here that we backed each other up. There was one officer who respected me, but he didn't think women should be in there except maybe to take care of kids or something. And I have to tell you, his mind by the time he got out was when he left that department, was absolutely, totally changed. As he saw, you know, because his attitude was, I want someone that can pick me up and throw me over my shoulder kind of thing and carry me out, you know, if something happens to me. And I just looked at him dead serious. You know, if you're on that ground, and he was a big guy, trust me, I will, you know, I'm going to be dragging you out of there. I will get it done because I understand. your adrenaline kicks out.
Absolutely.
Heck, you know, you can, you know, so it's like I had no doubt, you know, I had his back. And,
well, that's good to hear.
Martha,
let me ask you a question that I get asked a lot. And,
okay.
You know, all of us respect, you know, what police officers do. You know, I've had some people in my family that were involved in law enforcement. And I think we all have a respect for police officers. And at the same time, some of us, and I hear this a lot, some people are beginning to interpret the actions of officers to – it just kind of seems like protect and serve is giving way to intimidate and control. And people are beginning to wonder if police officers are going to be part of the control, takeover type things that people worry about. And speak to the people that want to have respect and always have had respect for law enforcement. But now when they see what are interpreted as abuses of power and they see officers that don't seem to be as friendly as they used to be and, you know, all look like they're soldiers and are all, you know, seemingly all of them are acting, again, like I said, instead of protect and serve, intimidate and control. Just speak to those of us that have respect for law enforcement but seem to have this little creeping worry that things are changing and not in a positive way.
Well, things are changing, and you have officers, good officers, longtime officers, who are leaving because of changes and just the attitudes with the people. Fortunately, out here in the area of Texas where I am, everybody has a deep respect for law enforcement and for the officers and the deputies. And
good.
So we don't get
good.
What a lot of the big cities do. I would want people to know that over 75% of the police departments in the United States have 10 or less employees.
Really?
So the majority, the vast majority of police departments are small departments. The community policing, I think, really started with rural policing because that's how you do it in the rural areas. You know the neighbors. When I would field train somebody, you're going down house, oh, that house has so-and-so over here does this, and you see the families, and if you're there for any length, you watch the kids grow up, you watch them have kids, and you also have the understanding that that person you put in jail today might be sitting across from you in church or at the restaurant you're at tomorrow. So you're always going to have kind of a young, punky type because no profession is perfect. And some of those younger guys, a lot of stuff comes with experience and age. And you get some young gung-ho guys, and they're going to maybe be a little quick, but they're also afraid. And as far as the military looking, we get the police departments, the sheriff's departments, they don't go out and buy, like, their SWAT items that they use. And when a citizen needs, you know, a response that would call for SWAT, they want SWAT there with the gear that they need. that stuff is all donated stuff. We get all that stuff. That's all like military decommissioned stuff. And just like the fire departments get their you know, not the big fire departments, the paid, but all the mass of the thousands of volunteer fire departments, their stuff comes from places like the Forest Service. You know, they used to have a program, and I don't know if they still have it, you know, with the military bases. You have this huge decommissioned areas that you could go, and these mass catalogs where you could order all these things and go pick them up to help supply stuff. And when people think about what, they have to remember that the military is not allowed to operate in the U.S. like a police department or anything like that other than on the bases, you know, so that if something major is happening, you can't wait for the military to come show up like they might in some countries and take control or handle the situation. Those law enforcement agencies have to do it. They have to be prepared to battle the terrorists. You know, they have, you know, and you have to be able to fight them, you know, with equal, as best as you can, equal firepower.
Right, right. So it's not a situation where law enforcement agencies are intentionally trying to craft a more intimidating look. They're just using the equipment and materiel that's given to them, correct?
You know, gotcha. And then you get grants. You know, you can get grants for vests and different things for the, some agencies. And you have guidelines of what you have to do. Now, granted, there are some police departments, maybe with younger chiefs, that they, you know, and I've seen them out there where everybody just their everyday wear is like a tactical look. You know, they think they look cool. But you'd have the same thing with paranormal teams.
Absolutely.
With the same, you know, with the same look. But police have to be trained in so many of the, then, and you have a lot of cross-training between military and law enforcement. You know, your military is being trained to be peacekeepers, but they're, you know, they, where they were trained, like when my husband was in the service, you know, you're trained to kill. You're not trained to go in there and be a cop.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and they're, and then they're not allowed to come over here and do stuff. That's why you have National Guard can come in for, if you had martial law or, you know, you have some serious thing, you know, now they can, you know, you're going to have National Guard before you're going to have anybody. And there's always emergencies where everybody pitches in, but
right,
your everyday stuff, those police departments have to handle it. Now out here, say you need a dog, you need the dogs to come out. If they can't make it from a state prison, we used to have them come from Fort Hood down in Temple. They would bring a dog, you know, to search if somebody took off in the woods, river bottoms,
right,
or whatever. You do that. But they have to be, these police departments, and they have to be trained to handle terrorists, because it's the police departments that are going to be handling any act of terror in the United States.
Absolutely. But
they're,
you don't think, in your opinion, with all of your years of expertise, that people have to worry about a nationwide agenda of law enforcement being taught to turn against the citizenry of the United States?
No, I'm still being taught, and there aren't even classes offered like that. And I guarantee if something like that were to happen, not law enforcement-wise, you're going to have law enforcement officers standing right there with the citizens on many things.
Well, that is great to hear, because I do hear people that have those worries. And, of course, you know, the media doesn't really publicize the good officers and the good police officers doing good things. They always want to, you know, focus on the officers that are doing the bad things. And it's good to hear from someone with a great law enforcement background and years of experience, you know, talking about what's really going on. Martha, when we get back, I'd like to, if we can, shift gears and start talking about how you got into the paranormal and start talking about your ideas on paranormal investigation and how you fold in some of your law enforcement training and discipline into that. And we'll talk about that right after this break, okay?
Okay.
So hang on maybe a 1 to 2 minute break and we'll be right back. Now, folks, this is Jeffrey Daugherty, your Christian whistleblower. We're talking tonight on Create Yourself with Martha Hazard Decker. She's a paranormal investigator. with several years of law enforcement experience, all the way from volunteer all the way up to assistant chief. We'll be talking with her when we get back about her paranormal investigations and about how she brings her law enforcement experience into that. And stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. This is Jeffrey Daugherty. I'm your Christian whistleblower. We'll be right back. Well, hi, folks. This is Jeffrey Daugherty. I had the opportunity this past week to speak at the Paradigm Symposium in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I was talking about the alien agenda in the New Testament. We had a fascinating time, lots of great questions, and you could see a lot of light bulbs going off. If you'd like to hear and read about that information, it's actually included in my book, which is entitled Final Message of the Last Apostle. If you visit jeffreydaugherty.com and christianwhistleblower.com, either one, and just simply click on the top where it says books, or you can see a picture of the book down just a little ways on the website, and you can click right on that picture as well. That'll take you to the bookstore, and don't be afraid. I know that paperback books at $20, $25, whatever they are, can sometimes be a big expense, an expense that's well worth it, I would say. But if you do have a great interest in the subject matter, you can also get a great high-quality ebook for just $5. So if you want to know about the alien agenda in the New Testament and what it really means, jeffreydaugherty.com, christianwhistleblower.com, and you can order that book today. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, your Christian whistleblower, and I invite you to visit jeffreydaugherty.com or christianwhistleblower.com. And get your copy of Final Message of the Last Apostle today.
The Christian Whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty.
And we are back with Martha Hazard Decker. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty. You're listening to the Create Yourself program. Martha, how old were you when you became interested in the paranormal realms?
Shoot, I was really young because I had my first experience when I was like about 4 years old.
Will you tell us about that?
Sure. It was. You know, I have a memory of it. Fairly vivid. I was in bed. I have no idea what time it was. It was late. I think the parents might have still been up. My room had windows on two walls. And I used to just have this sense of, you know, like even then I still recall having that sense that you get when somebody's staring at you.
Right.
And I was aware of that back then. I had all the stuff, you know, cover yourself up with sheets because a bug might, you know, spider might crawl down. Don't stick your hands or legs over because a monster under the bed. And definitely keep your closet closed.
Absolutely. We all know that.
So I had all that, but I wasn't one that said there's, you know, I never ever said to my parents anything about there's a monster in my room kind of thing. I never did that. And I just kept those little things to myself. But one night I woke up, whenever it was, from a sound sleep, and I'm facing one window, and I get that that feeling that somebody's watching me. And I actually get the nerve to turn around and look, and it was over towards the other window. And I see this shadow or outline of a hand, and it's big, so it was probably light from outside somewhere projecting it bigger than it was. But it was a hand of somebody or something that was like outside the window. And as soon as I screamed, it disappeared. And of course, you know, you're having a dream, and the parents, you know, assure you nobody went out and looked. And that was back in the late 50s, maybe, and in our neighborhood,
so you're confident
people didn't wander around
or anything like that.
No, No, it was not a tree. It was a hand. Let me tell you, I can see that hand whenever I think about it.
Ooh, I bet you can.
And I've had people tell me through the years that that was actually part of a figure that, like, protects me, or it shows up in certain times or something.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I have just things that happen off and on, you know, through my life. I just, you know, a lot of times I know things. I don't know how I know them. And I would, you know, tell people I know things. It's like, okay, like tonight, I was looking for the lens cap to one of my cameras that I had up in Oklahoma recently. And, you know, I always keep the lens caps on my lenses. And I have looked through my camera bags, the car, you name it, I have looked everywhere for that. And in our laundry room / pantry, we have a little box where we put, like, protein bars and different things like that.
Right.
And so just a little while. So I'm in there, you know, putting some more in there and moving stuff around so it's all standing up neatly. And what did I find underneath the bars that were there? That lens cap. Now, you tell me
underneath
how it got
the
there.
Bars.
Yes.
Huh. Do you have an idea that maybe a tricky, playful spirit did it, or maybe a tricky, playful human friend?
Well, no human friend, because it was, I had it with me in Oklahoma, and it disappeared in Oklahoma.
Isn't that interesting? And you find it under the protein bars back home in Texas.
Yeah, and I'm assuming it missed. That was the last place I had it, was Oklahoma. I hadn't pulled, you know, I had put the camera up because I kept the camera open. So I just hadn't really looked for it, you know, until the other day. I thought, oh, it's got to be in the camera bag, you know, where everything else is.
Well, isn't that interesting? Hey, have you ever seen that hand again since when you were a little girl?
Well, I haven't seen the hand, but there was a figure, and when somebody was talking about it, I don't know if it was just suggestion from them, but I started remembering where I saw this figure over in the corner of their room by the hand, that I'd seen it before, and I've seen it several other times, but the only real memory I have of it was when I was 19, and it wasn't the hand, it was the figure. And,
oh, the whole figure this time.
It's the whole figure, and I have, you know, memories of that, but I have a memory of being chased as a child through somewhere that, when I think about it, you know, I was probably maybe 8, maybe younger, because when we first moved into our neighborhood in Memphis, you had farms all around. You know, it wasn't, there was a lot of pasture land, but there was a little strip of woods behind us. And I remember having a guy that I was out there wandering around, and now, many years later, I'm going, now, did I really see that? Did that really happen then, or is it just something from somewhere else? But
right.
The hand is a definite go. The figure, because when I've seen the figure, when I saw it the best when I was 19, my folks were in Dallas, and I moved down to Dallas like a year after they did. And so I'm in one of the rooms until I can get an apartment that has two twin beds. One bed is right by the door into the bedroom. And I was asleep in the other one, and I woke up. Something made me awake, and I was awake. And I watched this figure two nights in a row, the exact same thing happened. It came walking into the hall and into my room. I never felt fear. There's a lot of things where I just feel like I have faith. I believe everything's going to be okay on a lot of things. You know, I just have that deep belief. And,
right.
But it walked in, and my best description of it was our vision of a druid. It was tall and in a cape, like, you know, like you see in the movies how they always do the druids and everything.
Right.
It was like that, right. But there was no face. It was darker than the rest of the dark. It was like a solid shadow figure, and it would come in, look over at me, and then it would go to the very edge of that other twin bed and sit on the edge of it and sit up very straight and stare out. Both nights I felt like it didn't freak me out.
Did you still feel it was protective in nature?
Yes, I felt like it was protected, that it was there for a reason. It was guarding me for something.
That's fascinating. I've heard something about that recently. I might have to rethink it. So, Martha, did your paranormal investigation career come before or after you entered into law enforcement?
Well, other than just things happening to me and trying to learn about it, I really didn't start investigating till around 99. Well, that's when I started more of the investigating. I was, and I started by going to Jefferson, Texas. Being the sergeant at the time, over patrol with patrol and everything, you know, I was on call almost 24/7. If any, the guys all swore I never slept, because I would pick up the phone, and I still do, and I'm wide awake, except for that one time I had to go, oh, no, and call real quick and say, stop, don't do that. Oh, crap, stop. I can't believe I said that. But that was only once in all those years, so I guess that's good. But
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I forgot. What was the question?
We were just talking about, I had asked you if you started into paranormal investigations or law enforcement. You told us that it's probably, 10 or 15 years after getting into law enforcement that you started doing investigations in Jefferson?
Well, I got in the mid-80s, but then I went back to journalism for a while and worked for several papers. And then in 93, I actually went back and got in full-time, and I was still doing some journalism, working for one of the papers, and I just dropped that because I didn't want to cover the law enforcement. I didn't want to, you know, I wasn't covering that city, but I didn't want to cover any law enforcement stuff to call anything into question. I knew my integrity was good. And everything, and I knew I was unbiased, but just to keep it where there's no doubt to anybody.
That's wisdom.
I kept doing that. Yeah, and that was probably, I'm not sure, that must have been about that time that I went, probably, that might have been in 99 when I just stopped doing that, not 2000, somewhere around in there.
Right. And what were your initial impressions of the techniques of quote-unquote paranormal investigators?
Well, I don't ever really down anybody's way to do things because, like anything else, everybody has different things that works for them. Sure. I mainly I just ask these young people that, you know, I've talked to myself that say that they learned how to do what they do by watching TV.
Right.
You know, they watch like the Ghost Adventures and different things like that, and you try to explain to them. Or, well, the easiest way I explain that to people, and when I speak, I usually use this analogy, is watching Ghost Adventures or watching any of the other shows like that is the same as someone in law enforcement watching Cops. You don't watch Cops to learn how to be a cop. You watch Cops to learn what not to do.
You mean you didn't learn how to be a law enforcement officer by watching T.J. Hooker?
Well, now that was different, but Cops, the show Cops. Yeah. You know, Sea Hunt made me want to scuba dive and Jacques Cousteau.
Right.
So.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Are you a diver, Martha?
Yes, I am.
We'll have to dive sometime. I'm a avid diver myself.
In fact, when I was with the fire department, as a firefighter, I was also head of the dive team.
Oh, my.
We don't have, we got rid of our gear several years ago, and it's about time for us to start getting some more gear. But, yeah, I used to do the rescue dive. Now, that's some freaky stuff.
That is some freaky stuff.
Because out here, the lake, you might have 1, maybe 2 feet of visibility on a good day. So having to prepare yourself to go in and dive for somebody, and you already know that if they're in the lake, they're dead.
Right.
Because by the time the dive team gets on scene, you know, unless there was some miracle and they were in a vehicle and got trapped in an air pocket, which, you know, can happen, but rarely, you know you're looking for a body. So instead of, you know, rescue team, you ought to be more of a recovery team. But you had to steel yourself because you know that probably the only way you're going to find that body is when it, like, hits you in the face.
Mm.
And that is very difficult to do.
That's amazing. That I can't imagine what that takes.
Well, once I thought it was a body, I think the first time, but there's like some 150-pound, like, alligator gars and stuff out in the lake. And we're out there, you know, we're feeling on, you know, on the bottom of the lake and everything. And there's all sorts of stuff out in the lake. And I thought, you know, oh, there it is. I just stuck my hand through the person or something. And it was just a big dead fish that had floated back down. Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, Martha, let's take another short break. And when we get back, we'll get into you talking about more maybe technical things about what you think investigators could do and could learn from law enforcement to increase their effectiveness and maybe their credibility. So we'll be right back for that. We're speaking tonight with Martha Hazard-Decker, a veteran paranormal investigator and also a veteran law enforcement professional. She's given us some real hope, I think, and some real great information about the attitude of law enforcement towards citizens. I feel very thankful for her sharing that heartfelt information with us. And we'll be right back with our last segment with Martha Hazard-Decker right after this. Well, hi, folks. This is Jeffrey Daugherty. I know that you've enjoyed now for a few years the Christian Whistleblower Program, and I want to let you know that we have created a new program, and it's called Create Yourself. I'd like to invite you to join us for the Create Yourself with NCK and Friends, where I'll be talking with folks that, in my estimation, are on the cutting edge of spiritual evolution. And I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be the usual suspects that you hear. We're looking for people that are up and coming. We're looking for people that are cutting edge. We're looking for people that are outside the box. So you're going to be hearing from some very unique individuals. You're going to be hearing from some individuals that don't worry about whether they're in line with what's going on. They're drawing new lines and blazing new trails. The Create Yourself program with NCK and Friends every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and of course 5 o'clock p.m. for those of you on the West Coast. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, your Christian whistleblower, inviting you to join me for the Create Yourself program.
And now, back to the Edward Snowden of the New Testament, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty.
Martha, what would you say is the number one thing that you learned in your law enforcement that aids and helps you in your paranormal investigations?
how to interview people, which is what my book is about, and how to
Tell us about that book.
Okay. Well, the book is called Paranormal Profiling, but it's actually about how to interview your clients or potential clients or witnesses, you know, what to look for in signs of deception, how to build rapport with them, you know, what to look for, what to do, what not to do, especially, and I'm talking more now when I go to conferences about how to interview children, how to establish their rapport, how to establish, like, truth lie with them, just like you do in a forensic interview for a child with abuse or something. So I use all the basic interrogation and investigative techniques because it's something that can be applied to any field. I've had some HR people ask for my presentation before because they wanted their HR people to learn.
Well, it's fascinating. I can see how it really takes things to a whole different level when you can really learn how to, you know, effectively and with great finesse bring people to the place where, you know, helping them tell the best recollection of the situation and put yourself as an investigator in the position where you can really be able to decipher if you're getting a straight scoop, so to speak, or maybe something else at times.
Right, because, you know, sometimes people lie. They want to be on TV. There's so many different shows out there now.
Everybody wants to be famous, don't they, Martha?
Yeah, or it's a business that wants to be able to say, oh, so-and-so team declared us haunted so they can make money.
Ah, see, I didn't even know about that. That's so sad.
Sure, we had a city in East Texas, Grand Saline, but the city actually reached out to me to bring my team over to investigate some of the city buildings, which we did. And then we had a public reveal at their library that was, you know, totally full of everybody. And we didn't find anything. We had some personal experiences in some of the buildings, but that was it. And, I'd use that as an opportunity to educate people. But then I was working on another book, and we went to a historical fundraiser that they do, I guess, every year, where you go to different buildings or different locations, and they've got somebody dressed in period piece talking about that location, and you eat dinner, of course, at a time doing this. When we got back to the library, which was initially the train station, the train depot, the young kid that was doing his rehearsed piece that somebody had written for him, he starts talking about my team. I didn't name them, but it was our team coming in and finding a lot of stuff that was not true. And
oh, no.
Pretty much, yeah, it was like, because I was there with another person, and Nancy and I looked at each other like, that wasn't us, because, you know, you wanted to stand up and go liar, but
right.
Yeah, that wasn't appropriate. That wasn't
right,
appropriate.
Right.
But the team is, or the town is dying economy-wise, and they would like to be like Jefferson, Texas, or some other places and find something that will bring people to their town to help revive it. And I like I said, there was some activity, but I'm not going to say, you know, to this huge group of people that, you know, the train depot's haunted, you know, this other building is haunted. I just, you know, we had personal experiences, and you just take that for what it is. Something unexplained, you know, that we heard, you know, we hear floorboards creaking on the opposite side of the building, or just, you know, whatever the little things are. And,
right.
Yeah, people are doing that. The businesses to make money, because if it's a big location, and one of the locations, you could actually take that building and you could have a ghost. They probably could still have a ghost tour there because there's a lot of old stuff. But they could take that building and then have events in there and say it's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that could be done that's not very, you know, good at that point. And now
right.
because we didn't find anything didn't mean that there was nothing there. It just wasn't there when we were there.
Absolutely.
And,
now, Martha, how has your work and your ideas and the paranormal profiling idea, how is that being received by other paranormal investigators?
Well, as far as I know, I haven't had anybody really say anything bad, except for you're always going to have that one or two.
Sure.
That you know, and chances are they just, you know, are trying to make themselves look better or feel good about themselves.
Absolutely. But, you know, my hat is off to you, because from what I've seen within the genre, and there's a lot of good people, and there's a lot of people trying hard, and there's a lot of people that want to do the right thing and be the most effective investigators they can. And I think that your work goes a long way towards empowering people who do have, you know, the proper mindset and do have the proper motivation. And, you know, you can kind of separate the genre from the people that want to be famous and are willing to do just about anything to do it, from the people that really have a true passion and a true dedication and a pure motivation. And it seems to me that your work is very instrumental in helping the folks that have pure motivation and really want to be good investigators to step up their game and really help the entire genre, I think, to aspire to a higher level of not only integrity, but a higher level of proficiency and effectiveness. So hats off to you.
Well, thank you. But, you know, I try to teach people or help them understand to the importance of remaining unbiased, the importance
Absolutely.
Of leaving your personal beliefs, your religious beliefs. Leave those at home because that person may not have the same thing. You've got to go in there with no biases. And I've talked to so many young people that when they get a call, if they're doing residentials or businesses, whatever that person says, they rush to the place without a thorough interview, and you need a thorough interview, and they're rushing there to prove what that person said is gospel truth, that it's right. And you can't do that. You can't do that. You don't go in to prove they're right or wrong. You go in there to try to understand what's going on.
Absolutely.
And that's important to do.
Absolutely. Martha, tell us where folks can contact you and where folks can get your books.
Okay, well, they can just go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or just put a search in, Paranormal Profiling, for the book. I will say that hard copy, it's, you know, big paperback, it's a soft copy at Amazon. They now have my book on sale right now, and it's usually like $17.99. They have it on sale for $4.89.
So Paranormal Profiling is on sale at Amazon for $4.89 right now.
$4.89. And the Kindle is like $9.95, but you can go to you can even find it in Kindle, and I would have the link. I don't have the link handy where it's like $3.99
for the Kindle. So I just go to Amazon.com and put in Paranormal Profiling, and I'll be able to find it.
Yep, you'll be able to find it, and you can get it $4.89 for the paperback.
I'm going to do that right
Facebook.
After the show.
Yeah, you should have got one last year.
I should have. Now, if someone wants you to do investigations for them, how do they reach you?
Well, they can reach me on Facebook. They can reach me through, you know, my Facebook page, Martha Hazard Decker, or my author page, Martha Decker, or East Texas Paranormal is a team, and we have a website. They can just Google that, and we'll pop up. And all of that has my phone number and contact information. I also have a new show I'm working on, web series called G's Inc., which is for granny investigations, and we're all over 50 and 60 women, and we're out here doing all kinds, whether it's a UFO, crypto, Bigfoot. That's why I was in Oklahoma for Bigfoot. Paranormal.
And it's all ladies.
Yes, and we're all,
hey,
you know.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. Tell us the name of that again.
Granny Investigations. And I don't have the website up yet, but it'll be grannyinvestigations.com. But you can find us on Facebook, too. You just look at the groups, you know, facebook.com/grannyinvestigations.
Fantastic. Martha, we're out of time. I really appreciate you being with me. We're going to expand the show to 90 minutes here over the next few weeks, and I want to have you back, okay?
Oh, just give me a holler. I'll be there.
All right, Martha. Thanks so much, and thanks for joining us. Martha Hazard Decker, her book is $4.89 on Amazon right now, Amazon.com, Paranormal Profiler. I'm going to go order that book. I hope you'll join us next week for the Whistleblower broadcast and the Create Yourself broadcast with more great leaders and more great teachers and more great folks like Martha Hazard Decker. And until then, I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, your Christian whistleblower, of course, wishing you peace and light. And above all else, unindoctrinate yourself.
Stay connected to the Christian Whistleblower at www.christianwhistleblower.com. Follow Jeffrey Daugherty on Twitter at unindoctrinate. On Facebook, Jeffrey Daugherty and Jeffrey Daugherty Show. Visit ChristianWhistleblower.com today. Learn to unindoctrinate yourself, create yourself, and live the life you'll love.